Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Ole Tangen Jr. with What's Trending on Social Media.
Coming up, we'll be taking you to the Gambia, where four ministers have just resigned.
People believe and see that Jammeh is losing the little support that he still has, even amongst his cabinets. Life here still kind of goes on as normal, but the situation gets more tense by the hour.
And Prime Minister Theresa May says Britain will be leaving the European Union's single market. We'll be talking to our Europe desk.
The tagline behind her head throughout this speech was a global Britain, but she kept repeating that she wanted a stronger Britain and an open trading nation.
But first, we find out what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. British Prime Minister Theresa May has delivered a keynote Brexit speech on Tuesday, outlining terms that would take Britain out of the European Union. Speaking in London, May said she would control the number of people coming to Britain and would seek access to trade agreements with the EU, the US, and other parts of the world.
I want to ensure we get a deal that's right for the UK. But in doing that, I believe we will also see a deal that is right for the European Union as well. I want to approach this in a positive, optimistic way. I think there is goodwill on both sides, and I think we can sit down and come to a partnership for the future that will be both to our mutual benefit.
2 days before the Gambia's scheduled inauguration on Thursday, support for longtime leader Yahya Jammeh has dwindled. A political official in Gambia's capital has said four of Jammeh's ministers have resigned and fled to neighboring Senegal, where West Africa's regional force stand ready if Jammeh doesn't step down. President-elect Adama Barrow has vowed to go ahead with his inauguration, even as Jammeh refuses to recognize his loss in December's election. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Nearly 200 people have reportedly died after a migrant boat capsized off the coast of Libya, marking the first major migrant boat disaster in the Mediterranean Sea this year. The International Organization for Migration has said more migrants have drowned in the sea this year compared to last year's total at this time.
This year, we are up to 219 deaths that we were aware of. Last year at this time, we recorded 91. So we're up more than double last year's total already, and possibly triple.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has defended globalization in a speech to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Xi said the world should say no to trade restrictions, but instead should embrace open trade with world partners. His message appeared to be aimed at U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, who's set to be inaugurated Friday and has vowed to confront China's growing global trade role. The World Food Program has suspended aid drops to the besieged Syrian city of Deir al-Zor. Heavy fighting in the government-held city between Islamic State militants and Syrian troops has killed more than 100 people as clashes continue to erupt after 4 days of fighting. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said Syria's military and allied Russian forces have been carrying out airstrikes against IS, who remain on the offensive in parts of the country. The UN has called for access to civilians cut off from humanitarian aid in the country, where thousands remain trapped. And now in African Cup action, Ghana faces off against Uganda on Tuesday, and former champions Egypt takes on Mali, ending the first of the three-week tournament. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
I'm Mark Caldwell. In the Gambia, the ministers for finance, foreign affairs, trade and the environment have resigned from President Yahya Jammeh's government. The move comes just 2 days before President-elect Adama Barrow is due to be sworn in as Jammeh's successor. Jammeh himself is refusing to step down. Our correspondent Adrian Creech is in the Gambia, in Serekunda, and I asked him what the reaction had been there to these resignations.
Well, obviously, people believe and see that Jammeh is losing the little support that he still has, even amongst his cabinets. Life here still kind of goes on as normal, but the situation gets more tense by the hour. For example, yesterday I could still see tourists coming into the country. Most of the hotel resorts, you know, Gambia is a very popular tourist destination, are still full. But today, a lot of countries gave travel warnings. They know that the situation is going to get more tense with the approaching deadline on Thursday when the inauguration of the new president is supposed to take place.
Any reaction from Jammeh himself?
Not yet. Usually, if he wants to say something, he does it in a speech on state TV, but he hasn't done that yet, as in regards to the resigning of some of his cabinet members. He keeps on insisting, however, that's what he did during his last appearance at the public TV, that the Supreme Court has to decide. So just to sum up the whole dilemma once again, Jammeh complains about irregularities during the elections, right? He wants the Supreme Court to take a decision. The Supreme Court, however, has only one judge. The rest of them were fired a while ago by Jammeh himself. So they basically cannot take a decision. So Jammeh has asked Sierra Leone and Nigeria to send more judges who can then take a decision. But they say they can only do that in May. So this is only... this is very far away, of course, from the planned inauguration ceremony that is going to take place on Thursday. So Jammeh says this date, Thursday, is not carved in stone. He wants the status quo to remain. Members of the civil society, however, say, let Jammeh go to court, that is okay. But then still he has to give up power on Thursday.
A Nigerian military source said today that Nigeria and other West African countries were preparing to intervene militarily in the Gambia. Now, what are Gambians making of the possibility of foreign troops entering their country?
Well, of course, people are scared of a scenario of a war here. Many are fleeing. Just came in from Senegal, where thousands of Gambians are already seeking refuge. Clearly, Gambia is on the verge of the war at this point of time, and the only person to avert it is Yahya Jammeh, the current president. Nobody here obviously wants a war, and hopefully, common sense will tell Yahya Jammeh that he is leading a country of less than 2 million people, a very tiny place, and he has little support within the country, but he has even less outside. There's not a single African country that is supporting what he is doing. So this is a very dangerous situation, and it's getting more and more likely that the situation might end into a military and war scenario.
Adrian Creech in Serekunda, The Gambia. In her long-awaited Brexit speech, Prime Minister Theresa May has said Britain will leave the European Union's single market in order to restrict immigration in a clean break from the bloc. Germany's Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier welcomed the speech, saying it created a little bit more clarity about the British plans. May was speaking before an audience of British civil servants and international diplomats at London's Lancaster House, a Georgian mansion that has hosted international summits. Emma Wallace from our Europe desk has been telling me more about the speech.
The tagline behind her head throughout the speech was a global Britain, but she kept repeating that she wanted a stronger Britain and an open trading nation. Most of her speech was about the EU and about leaving, obviously, that's what Brexit is about. But she kept on emphasising this idea that Britain was not really leaving the EU, but embracing the world. That was a very key part of her speech. She said a lot about welcoming immigration in terms of the brightest and the best, even though she also says that that Britain wants to control immigration. When she was mentioning immigration, it was normally in reference to the EU, so immigration from the EU rather than general global immigration. She said that she wanted to guarantee rights for EU nationals already within the UK, and that UK nationals already in the EU should also have their rights guaranteed. But then she said that would be, of course, open to negotiations with the EU.
And when are negotiations on Brexit going to start?
The timetable as it stands at the moment is still for her to trigger Article 50 by the end of March and to talk to the British Parliament by the end of February with some clearer guidelines for the kinds of things she's hoping to negotiate. But she did underline that she didn't want to be the person to be filling column inches and giving us daily updates, that her job was to get a good deal for Britain, and that's what she was going to do.
Now, this is presumably a matter of concern chiefly for Britain and the other members of the EU. But what about other parts of the world? How would Brexit, as Theresa May envisions it, affect relations with Africa?
Well, as I said, she was very keen on embracing the whole world and negotiating new trade deals, ambitious trade deals, open, strong, forward-looking trade deals with every part of the world. The phrase African countries was mentioned in her speech, although she didn't really elaborate much further. She talked a lot about trade deals with Brazil, with China, with India, with the US, of course, and European nations. That's perhaps not surprising given that that UK trade with Africa is a relatively small part of overall UK trade. She kept talking about Britain as a trading nation, but if I just look back to the latest figures from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and the Office for National Statistics, which come from November 2016, British total imports for that month were £42.5 billion and total exports were £29.3 billion, which means that Britain is a net importer. So for all this talk of exporting Britain as a trading nation, we are, as it stands, a net importer, not a net exporter.
Emma Wallace. Next, a sports story with a difference. Five young singers from Central African Republic wanted to visit Gabon for the Africa Cup of Nations, but they were not going there for the football, but rather to draw attention to the conflict and misery in CAR. But they were denied entry to Gabon, and so they are now spreading their anti-war message on the Cameroonian border. Moki Kinseka reports.
These are the voices of five young singers from the Central African Republic singing for peace. The group could not travel to Gabon due to lack of travel documents. Gathered at the Cameroon-Gabon border town of Kiosi, the group's leader, Kuchi Uben, told me what their music is all about.
All our songs are dedicated to peace in Africa. We sing for children who have lost their parents in war.
Nous voulons la paix, sécurité et la réconciliation. Président fondateur Baba Barthélémy Boganda.
The five belong to a group of refugee youths who escaped from troubled CAR when violence escalated. 27-year-old Dende Claudette is one of them. She told me that she had not seen her three sisters, who have since gone missing. These refugees want to use sports events like AFCON to send their message to the world.
I believe that you understand what war is. When you see how people are killed, you panic always. Even when you're trying to escape, what comes to your mind is that a bullet may meet you. At times a child is killed and his mother is not capable of carrying him to mourn because she has to escape to save her life.
And that report was compiled by Moki Kinseka. Ole, I understand there's been some sad news from the Gambia on social media.
Yes, absolutely. President-elect Barrow from the Gambia has announced on social media that unfortunately his 8-year-old son was killed on Sunday. He was attacked by a dog and apparently died on the way to the hospital. Aside from all of the political turmoil that's happening in the Gambia right now and his Barrow being in Senegal, he was apparently not able to attend the funeral of his son. So a lot of heartfelt tributes being sent out to him on social media. But people are also, of course, discussing the issue of Jammeh not stepping down. Ebu Bojang wrote that, "Let me repeat it for the purpose of clarity. Jammeh, your mandate expires on the 18th of January, and we are taking back our country," with the hashtag Gambia has decided. So that's really what's trending. People want Jammeh to step down. There's not one, I could not find one support of Jammeh on social media today.
Ali Tanjan Jr., thank you very much. A reminder, you're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. I'm Mark Caldwell with Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn in Germany. Coming up, a new political party in the Netherlands, which is pro-immigrants.
We are not just fighting racist people one by one. What we need is a change of the system.
More on that story later in the programme. But first, in Uganda, tests have confirmed that bird flu was responsible for mass deaths of wild birds on the shores of Lake Victoria. Now, bird flu viruses don't normally infect humans, but certain strains have caused severe respiratory diseases in people, usually those who have come into direct contact with the infected poultry. Alex Jitter has the story.
The confirmation came days after dead birds were reported on the shores of Lake Victoria in two central Uganda districts. Fishermen who came into direct contact with the birds reported the matter to district officials when they realized that the number of dying birds was increasing day by day. According to Uganda's Minister for Agriculture, Christopher Kibanzanga, the affected birds are mostly the migratory species.
The species that are so far affected are white-winged black, tan birds, and domestic ducks and chicken.
Birds always migrate from Europe and Asia and come to Uganda, where it is always warm between November and February. It is feared that birds from Asia could have spread the influenza. Meanwhile, health officials have already issued out information on the symptoms of the disease to population living near the affected areas. However, Dr. Anthony Mbonyi from the Ministry of Health insists that the risk of transmission from birds to humans is still very low.
When humans get this disease, you get cough, muscle aches, headaches, diarrhea, and it can be sometimes mild, but can also be very lethal, where it affects the organs, the lungs, the kidneys, and is associated with high mortality. But the risk, I must emphasize this, the risk from birds to humans is very low.
The Ministry of Health has sent out teams to investigate the extent at which the disease is spreading, as Juliet Sentumbwe, in charge of animal resources, explains.
We are sending an investigation team to critically assess which areas to cordon off, because we already have specifications of what to do on the farm that is affected, in the areas around, depending on what we find on the ground.
In the meantime, poultry farmers are already feeling the pinch after their products were banned in neighboring Kenya and Rwanda. Ugandan farmers export a lot of chicken and eggs to Kenya, Rwanda and South Sudan, where the demand is high. Foreign missions, including the United States and the United Kingdom, have advised people traveling to Uganda to avoid visiting the affected areas and coming into contact with birds. Johnny Sempebwa of the Uganda Tourism Board told DW on phone from Action Falls National Park that there was no big crisis to scare away tourists.
It's an incidence of a disease which has affected some species of birds, but which will not affect a tourist coming in to enjoy our attractions. We have been assured by the Ministry of Health that there is vigilance where this incident has occurred. You know, they are taking the rightful measures accordingly, but this shouldn't scare any tourists coming to Uganda. We have no report of any cancellation at this moment here at Uganda Tourism Board.
Sempebwa blamed the panic on the Ministry of Health officials, who he says announced an outbreak prematurely.
Alex Jitter reporting.
Africa on the move.
And Africa on the Move this week takes us to Kenya, where we meet multi-instrumentalist, vocalist and dance performer John Rapaso Otenyo. His passion is to create something authentically African, and he spent years travelling through the Kenyan countryside, learning about his culture and ancient instruments. This report by Katja van Eisenhardt-Rother is presented now by Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
John Rapaso Otenyo's love for his folk music draws back to his grandmother, a great singer and dancer. Otenyo's grandmother's love for Luo music and dances inspired him to follow right in her footsteps. So he taught himself how to make and play over 10 traditional instruments like the nyatiti, which literally means box, so it's a sound box, hit by the player, who often plays metal rings at the same time. But why does he do this?
There's a need for the young ones to get to know the instrument, their land, their people, their music, their environment. And that's why we decided to at least share with them the knowledge that we have of the instruments.
Otenyo holds regular workshops to inspire more youngsters to play the traditional instrument from the Luo ethnic group in Western Kenya. As Daniel Onyango explains, it's not a bad idea.
It's what we need to keep our culture alive. And I think Rapaso is really doing much in promoting our culture.
Lacking the resources to buy his drums, sound boxes or harps, he started making them himself. Otenyo collects used cans and natural materials like sisal, animal skin, wood and metal. And if it means taking a search in the dump sites of Nairobi, he will do so.
I saw the struggle of people asking, so where do we get that nyatiti? Where do we get that root? Where do we get that peke? Where do we get that nyangile or sanduku, you know? Yeah, so I decided, no, I will travel to these places. I will learn how to make them. I will learn these sounds and bring them close to the people.
The nyatiti is Otenyo's main instrument. This harp has 8 strings. The lower 4 represent the first 4 days after a boy child is born, and the upper 4 symbolize the first 4 days after his death. With its roots in Egypt, the nyatiti is traditionally played only by men. For Otenyo, this is one way of preserving his culture and tradition.
I believe that whatever we are doing will change many. For example, you know, the kids will only do whatever they see every day.
Without demanding a charge, Otenyo regularly teaches children how to play the traditional instruments. Having mastered the instruments, the singer and traditional dancer uses them to express himself through music, just as his grandmother did. Today, he uses every opportunity to perform before audiences, once again popularizing traditional music.
And that report was written by Katja van Eisenhardt-Rother.
Focus Europe.
To the Netherlands now, where there will be parliamentary elections in 2 months' time. The anti-Islam Freedom Party of Dutch lawmaker Geert Wilders is riding high in the opinion polls, and some analysts say it could end up being the biggest party in parliament. It's against this backdrop that two Dutch men of Turkish origin have founded a new political party called DENK, which aims to defend immigrants' rights. The Netherlands has a population of 17 million, 1 million of whom are immigrants or the children of immigrants. This report now by Lauren Freyer.
Sylvana Siemens got her start at the Dutch version of MTV. She went on to anchor the evening news and did Dancing with the Stars.
Here is Sylvana met Rhythm Nation.
Siemens is black, and she's spoken out against the Dutch Christmas tradition of Black Piet, in which Santa's helper is often played by a white person in blackface.
I have made this conscious decision to enter politics because I feel that we are not just fighting racist people one by one. What we need is a change of the system.
At first, Siemens joined a new Dutch political party called DENK, or Think. Its candidates include a Muslim woman who wears a headscarf, people of Turkish and Moroccan descent, and black people like Siemens. All of them say they've felt left out of Dutch politics. Sociologist Sandu Hira studies colonialism and racism. He says that while Wilders seeks votes by stirring up fear of immigrants, Dank seeks votes from the victims, whom Holland has failed to truly integrate.
People of color are not recognized as proper Dutch. And there is where the anger is from people who are seen as second-class citizens while they were born here. And that is the generation of Dank.
Dank wants to establish a national racism register to track hate speech, build a slavery museum in the Netherlands, and ban Black Pete. The party was founded 2 years ago by two Turkish Dutchmen who had dropped out of the Dutch Labour Party. I ran into some Dank voters on the sidelines of a youth soccer game. One of the dads, Bulent Özturk, points out his son on the blue team.
And if you look, the orange team, they're only Dutch, and the blue team, foreign.
Because you're talking about your son who is the third generation.
Yeah.
But you still call him a foreigner.
We are foreigners, yeah. We are being called foreigners. That's why we call ourselves foreigners.
Özturk still doesn't feel like he belongs in Dutch society nearly 50 years after his parents came to work here in the 1960s. So he says he plans to vote for Dank in the Dutch elections this March. But the party is already facing internal divisions. Siemens recently split with Dank to form a new faction. Dank has been accused of being secretive. It almost always refuses media interviews and puts out YouTube videos instead. Critics say those are similar tactics to the far right, putting the focus on identity politics and victimhood. Dank has also been accused of being a mouthpiece of Turkey because two of its founders are Dutch Turks. Critics fear the party may represent an effort by Turkey to infiltrate Dutch politics through dual citizens becoming Dutch politicians. But that accusation itself reveals how some Dutch see immigrants as loyal to another country.
Lauren Freya in the Netherlands. Football now, and we head to the Africa Cup of Nations, where Uganda are making their first appearance at the tournament in almost 40 years. They're playing Ghana as we speak, and Ole, you've been keeping an eye on the game. What's the score?
The score is nil all, so there is no one has scored in the game, and it is now in the 25th minute. So it looks like it's going to be a good game. So we'll see what happens. We'll update you quickly before the end of the show once again. But this is a long time coming for the Ugandan team, the Cranes as they're called. And Alan Kasuja, a friend of mine and a big Twitter fan, wrote that it's been very hard for him to explain, especially probably to colleagues at the BBC, that the last time Uganda took part in the AFCON was in 1978. But that doesn't stop people from wishing the team good luck. Christian Schmidt, the ambassador to Uganda from the European Union, said it's a fair game, 11 versus 11, nothing is impossible, so good luck, Uganda. And Evelyn Leary, another big Twitter user from Uganda, wrote, the last AFCON game Uganda played in 1978 was against Ghana. So we're going to push forward and wish my team good luck. But it also, this is football is never far from politics. So Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, the president of Uganda, tweeted, countrymen and women, let's rally behind the Uganda Cranes as they begin their quest for continental glory today. Good luck. And of course, in response, the president-elect of Ghana, Nana Akufo-Addo, said, best wishes to the players, technical and management team of the Black Stars. Time to end our 34-year wait for the AFCON trophy. Go for gold. And Raphael Damwema wrote that it's time for the stars to shine again. Hashtag Black Stars. Let's do this. And we did ask our users to put in some predictions, and they are leaning towards Ghana. We have Richard Zitha, who is from Ghana, predicts that Ghana will take it to nothing. And MC Ashong thinks that Ghana will win with a score of 1-0. There is a second game today that will be happening in a few hours, and that is Egypt against Mali. So the Pharaohs will be taking on the Eagles. And Richard Dissa also predicted that Egypt will take it 1-0. So there hasn't been much conversation about the Mali Egypt game. I'm sure people will be watching it. And it's really a tournament that's gained a lot of interest on the continent. And it looks like the level of play has risen to what people expect. And just as a final update, Ghana and Uganda still stands 0-0.
Ali Tajan Junior, many thanks. Our main stories. In the Gambia, four ministers have resigned from the government of President Yahya Jammeh. Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May has said the UK will make a clean break from the European Union and leave the single market. And we've also been hearing about a pro-immigrant party in the Netherlands. We end this edition of Africa Link from me, Mark Caldwell.
And me, Ali Tajan.
Bye now.